Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, November 11th, 2025. This is Veterans Day. Our first article on the front page is Veterans Answer the Call. Heartland touts notion of service on Marine Corps' 250th by Drew Zimmerman. Heartland Community College honored the nation's veterans as well as the 250th anniversary of the United States Marine Corps during a special celebration Monday at the Workforce Development Center in Normal. Heartland President Keith Cornile said celebrating the 250th anniversaries of the Corps as well as the Army and Navy this year illustrates that the country was born out of service. It was also fitting for Heartland to host such a milestone because the school also was founded on the notion of service, he said. It means we are transforming the lives of individuals in our communities, and we are so grateful for those who have given their service to our country because it allows us to do the work that we do, Cornile said. The keynote address was delivered by retired Air Force Major General John Borling, a distinguished Vietnam veteran whose career included service as Chief of Staff at the Headquarters Allied Forces North Europe. He also was stationed at NATO's Supreme Headquarters in Belgium and spent more than 6 years as a prisoner of war in Hanoi. Borling reflected on Veterans Day on Tuesday and reminded attendees that the holiday's name does not contain an apostrophe because it was meant to be a day of remembrance of all veterans. In addition to the millions of military veterans, Borling also acknowledged the countless extended family members who have been touched by military service. Borling also recounted one story that happened when he was a prisoner of war in 1970. He had a chance to rummage through some desks in his encampment and discovered an envelope with a stamp commemorating the Apollo 11 moon landing. Borling had been unaware of this historic moment, so when he shared this with his camp, it delivered a much-needed morale boost. Borling would relay this story to Harrison Schmitt, one of the last two astronauts to step foot on the moon as part of the Apollo 17 mission. As an expression of gratitude, Schmitt presented Borling with a signed photo of himself on the moon grasping the American flag with the caption, "Glad we could help." "The country's still counting on us vets," Borling said. Make sure we answer the call. Following Borling's address, Marine Corps veteran and Heartland student Miguel Estrada took a moment to acknowledge the work of the college's Chapter of Student Veterans of America, a free club available to veteran students, military spouses, and military-connected dependent children attending Heartland. Cornile said military service can take its toll on the minds and bodies of veterans, and Heartland is there to support student veterans not just in the classroom or at their veteran center, but also through student services and the numerous programs offered through community partnerships. "We are invested in your success without question, just as you have invested in our security, peace, and prosperity as part in our nation," Cornell said. "And for the veterans who aren't currently students, to our current serving members of the military and the armed services, and to the family members of those who are serving, I want to say this. We are grateful for all that you have done and continue to do." The event concluded with a ceremonial cake cutting to recognize the anniversary of the Continental Congress establishing the Marine Corps on November 10, 1775. It is tradition to cut the cake with a sword. The first slice goes to the oldest Marine in attendance, while the second slice goes to the youngest Marine, which represents the passing of history and tradition. In keeping with the Veterans Day theme, we have Veterans Corner column is now published in Tuesday's edition of the Pantograph and online at thepantograph.com. VFW Post 454 will host the McLean County Veterans Day ceremony again this year at 10106 East Lincoln Street in Bloomington, just off Morrissey Drive. The ceremony will start at 11 minutes to 11 a.m. on November 11th with a rifle shot each minute until 11 a.m. Weather permitting, there will be a flyover at 1 minute to 11 a.m. to open the ceremony. Each Veterans Day, the number of restaurants that offer free meals or other food items to veterans increases. The following restaurants are offering free meals this year: Applebee's, Bob Evans, Cracker Barrel, Denny's, IHOP, Little Caesar's Pizza, Firehouse Subs, Texas Roadhouse, Rob Dobbs, and Hy-Vee. Other restaurants and food providers are offering free appetizers, desserts, and specialty food or discounts. After the Veterans Day ceremony at the VFW, veterans will be able to eat at the VFW. Bloomington Modern Dentistry will host a free Veterans Dental Clinic on Friday, November 21st, from 8 a.m. to noon. The office is at 2817 Reed Road in Bloomington. Call 309-662-5921 to schedule an appointment for a cleaning, filling, extraction, or some limited additional services. Service will be limited to one per veteran to allow services to as many veterans as possible. The passing of a veteran can be frustrating for the family to acquire the veteran's DD-214 and other information to obtain approval for burial in a VA national cemetery. However, the veteran and their family can confirm eligibility to be interred at a VA national cemetery in advance of the need. The completion of VA Form 40-10007 can be done online or by downloading the application and completing it manually. Mail the completed form to capital NCA Evidence Intake Center, Post Office Box 5237, Janesville, Wisconsin 53547, or you can fax the form to 1-855-840-8299. Be sure to provide any supporting documents, such as DD-214, along with the application form. Most veterans are familiar with the headstone markers and medallions, but a recent change in VA burial benefits now provides another alternative. The family member of a deceased veteran can now receive a plaque or urn to hold the remains of a deceased and cremated veteran. Eligibility for the plaque or urn is the same as for the headstone and medallion. Please note that once a plaque or urn has been granted, no other burial benefits can be granted, such as headstones, markers, and medallions, or interring remains at a VA cemetery. The VA form to apply for the plaque or urn is Form 40-1330UP, which can be completed using the Quick Submit tool through Access VA at eauth.va.gov/ACCESSVA. Disability benefit letters may be required for a variety of benefits and/or services. The most common disability letter involves the State of Illinois P-Tax 342 for disabled veterans to obtain or maintain property tax reductions or complete elimination. Call 1-800-827-1000 to have the letter mailed to you, or go to capitalva.gov and log in using either id.me or login.gov. On the home screen, click on your name on the upper right-hand corner. Then, from the drop-down, click on Letter, verify your mailing address, and click on View Letters. Then choose one of the two benefit letters, the P-Tax 342 provides a reduction of $2,500 of the equalized assessed value for veterans with at least a 30% VA disability rating, or a $5,000 reduction in the EAV for at least a 50% rating. veterans with a 70% or higher VA disability rating will not pay real estate taxes in Illinois. In most people's minds, the politicians who are elected to run our government are in reality the government. Their actions seem more often than not to be more of an extension of their desire to be reelected instead of what is best for our country. It is not particularly patriotic to support a politician or a political party just because the person or the party seeks power. The following quote summarizes what true patriotism involves. Quote, "Patriotism is supporting your country all the time and your government when it deserves it." Close quote. And this was spoken by Mark Twain. And with that quote in mind, we turn back to the front page where we have government shutdown. Senate passes legislation to reopen. Bill funds ag programs, SNAP, and veterans affairs into the fall of 2026. This is by Lisa Mascaro with the AP. A legislative package to end the government shutdown appeared on track Monday after a handful of Senate Democrats joined with Republicans to break the impasse in what has become a deepening disruption of federal programs and services, the longest in history. What's in and out of the bipartisan deal drew sharp criticism and leaves few senators fully satisfied. The legislation provides funding to reopen the government, including for SNAP, food aid, and other programs, while also ensuring back pay for furloughed federal workers the Trump administration left in doubt. But notably lacking is any clear resolution to expiring health care subsidies that Democrats have been fighting for as millions of Americans stare down rising insurance premiums. That debate was pushed off for a vote next month, weeks before the subsidies are scheduled to expire. President Donald Trump noted the deal as he arrived at the White House after watching the Washington Commanders game Sunday evening against the Detroit Lions on the 40th day of the funding lapse. "It looks like we're getting close to the shutdown ending," he said. The bill cleared a procedural hurdle 60-40 late Sunday, with 8 Democrats joining most Republicans. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer of New York voted against because it failed to fully address the health care funds. It will next go to the House, where lawmakers have been away since September, but were being told to prepare to return to Washington this week. Then it's to Trump's desk for his signature. Here's a look at the deal as it's moving through Congress. Included is funding to keep much of the federal government running for the next couple of months to January 30th, with a stopgap measure. It largely funds government operations at their current rates. Yet, in a breakthrough for what's considered a more normal appropriations process, the package also includes several bills to fully fund other government operations, including agricultural programs and military construction, along with Veterans Affairs for the full fiscal year through September of 2026. Additionally, the package ensures states would be reimbursed for money they spent to keep the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP, and the Women, Infants, and Children's Program, or WIC, running during a shutdown. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine, the chair of the Appropriations Committee, said she was relieved. "This shutdown has gone on far too long," she said, "and I also think it's highly significant that we'll have 3-year-long appropriations bills attached. Veterans Day is coming very soon, and it would be wonderful if we get the full-year Veterans Affairs bill signed into law." The Democrats failed to secure their main demand during the shutdown, which was an extension of the health care subsidies that many of the 24 million people who buy insurance through the Affordable Care Act rely on to help defray costs. Instead, the package guarantees a vote on the issue in December, which was not enough for most of the Democrats who rejected the deal and voted against it. "The American people want us to stand and fight for health care," said Senator Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat from Massachusetts. The package seeks to roll back some of the Trump administration's shutdown-related hits to the federal workforce. Employees faced repeated threats of firings and mass layoffs this year. The stopgap measure reinstates federal workers who receive layoff notices and protects against such future actions. It would also provide back pay for federal workers who were furloughed or working without pay during the shutdown, something that's traditionally provided but that the Trump administration threatened was not guaranteed. Political and procedural hurdles remain as Congress, which is controlled by Republicans, slogs through more voting and the shutdown entered its 41st day on Monday. Senators hope to skip past a series of steps that could drag voting out all week if the dissenters put up a prolonged fight. One Republican, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, voted against advancing the package on Sunday, and he is said to have concerns over a hemp industry provision. Three ultra-conservative GOP senators held up voting for more than 2 hours as they demanded consideration of their ideas. It is unclear if any of them plans to stage further protests. Democrats who have fought for the past month in their hopes of preserving the health care subsidies could also delay final passage, and their next steps are uncertain. The package faces fresh scrutiny once it goes to the House, where Speaker Mike Johnson of Louisiana holds a slim GOP majority and would likely need almost all Republicans to support the bill in the face of objections from Democrats who are holding out for the health care funds. House leader, Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York said the party will fight the bill, forcing the Republicans in the House to pass it largely on their own. Returning now to more local stories, we have Boy 13 Dies After Mobile Home Fire by Allison Petty. A 13-year-old who was rescued from a burning mobile home in Normal earlier this month has died from his injuries. The boy was identified as Eder Diaz, a 7th-grade student at Parkside Junior High School. Unit 5 officials notified families of his death and said counseling and other support would continue to be available for students and staff. Eder was a kind and energetic 7th grader, and his loss will be felt by many in our school community, Parkside administrators wrote in a letter to families on Saturday. The Normal Fire Department also confirmed the loss in a post on social media, saying the organization was heartbroken at the news. Our sincerest condolences and prayers go out to everyone that has been affected by this horrible loss. Firefighters were called to 865 2nd Street in North Meadow Village at 1:50 a.m. November 2nd after reports of a mobile home on fire with people possibly trapped inside. Crews found heavy fire throughout the structure and discovered the teen in a bedroom during a search. He was initially unresponsive, but paramedics were able to restore a pulse and spontaneous breathing before he was transported to a hospital in critical condition. No one else was injured in the fire, which destroyed the home. Normal Fire Chief Mick Hoomer previously said crews, quote, faced intense fire conditions when they arrived, but they didn't hesitate to go inside and search for anyone who might still be trapped, close quote. Calling the incident, quote, a stark reminder of how quickly fire can spread and how critical working smoke alarms are in giving people time to escape, close quote. Diaz was active in Parkside Athletics, and the school's cross-country team is organizing a fundraiser to support his family. The Redder for Eder 3-mile run and walk will be held at 9 o'clock a.m. November 22nd on the Parkside Junior High cross-country course at Maxwell Park. Participants are encouraged to wear red, and all proceeds will benefit the Diaz family, according to the school district. If participating in the run is not a possibility, donations can be made through event organizers. Contact Paul Bliss at 360-481-8818, or you can email runfaster3 comcast.net. And Caitlin Klepek writes, Artists Gallery Show Explores Concept of Home. Bloomington artist Angel Ambrose has premiered a new exhibit, Reckoning Home, drawing upon her experience with the loss and longing for home and finding peace. The exhibit will be at her studio, Angel Ambrose Fine Arts Studio and Creative Space, at 101 West Monroe Street, Suite 201 in downtown Bloomington. The exhibit will be open on Tuesdays and Saturdays or by appointment through November. Reckoning Home was inspired by a previous show Ambrose had done while attending Illinois State University 40 years ago. She described the previous show as a series of paintings inside boxes, looking into her home life. The 1985 show at ISU earned Ambrose the Best Undergraduate Painter Award. At the time, Ambrose said she did not fully encompass all that home could be, prompting her to recreate the show with a new exhibit. Her new exhibit reflects her artistic evolution, supported by teachers who saw talent in her from a young age, as well as growth in her Christian faith. From an early age, Ambrose always showed an interest in art. My mom said that was the only thing that would keep me quiet, she said with a smile. In high school, art teacher Carol Kessler showed an interest in Ambrose. In the midst of the students' home life struggles, Kessler gifted Ambrose with art supplies and money to help support her in her dream. I ended up getting positive validation where I was not getting positive validation at home, Ambrose said. Ambrose said she and Kessler, who now has a gallery in Shelbyville, still keep in touch. Art was definitely a way that helped me to cope with the things I was going through in my life. It was, you know, a little bit of an escape, Ambrose said. It was a way for me to make sense of the world that I was in. Throughout her life, Ambrose has pondered the concept of home, she said. At 17, she was a ward of the state of Illinois. Upon acceptance into ISU on a state scholarship, Ambrose found a new home through the university. As I've grown and healed, I have realized that there are similar things in most of our stories. By sharing my story, I can help somebody else. In recreating the boxes from her original show, Ambrose chose 5 hexagonal canvases to emulate her previous show's works, which she described as paintings inside empty boxes, meaning there was a void at the center of each. Each current canvas displays a home representing the different phases of life, how the idea of home can feel different to different people. The last home featured in the progression represents a doorway beyond physical life, Ambrose said, representing finding faith and a perfect future home, which she believes is found through Christianity. As far as similar things in stories, I mean, everybody's had struggles. Everybody has conflict. Everybody has had things they wanted to be one way but ended up another way, Ambrose said. She paints a new body of work with a theme for each annual Downtown Bloomington Art Walk, which took place last weekend. I realized that the timing would work out, that if I painted and got that show ready, that I would be able to bring it to my studio for the art walk, she said. Ambrose's work includes 18 unique pieces and 23 canvases, with most for sale. Her studio also features hundreds of other pieces for sale. Most of her paintings use acrylics to convey the deep, personal, and universal emotions, she says. As an artist, I think deeply, I feel deeply, and I still struggle. My art helps me make sense of some of the turmoil that I experience, Ambrose said. There are beautiful things in the hard times. There are things of value and worth, and I feel I learn my best lessons sometimes in the hard times. And from Streeter, we have Poco a Poco Adds 3 to Board of Directors by Olivia Jacobs. Poco a Poco, a Streeter-based nonprofit, has announced 3 Central Illinois residents joined its 25-26 Board of Directors. New members are Jenilyn Ruther, Jack Theory, and Daniel Tripp. Rother of Peru is the choral director and private voice instructor. She directs both the Illinois Valley Community College adult and youth choirs, and she sings with professional ensembles Cor Cantiamo and the Canterbury Singers, and teaches at Music Suite 408. Theory is a 2024 Ottawa Township High School graduate and a two-time Poco a Poco Young Artist alumnus. He received the Voices in Harmony Scholarship formed by Don and Elaine Farmer, and he now works full-time as an inventory specialist at Sabic Innovative Plastics. Tripp is an associate principal at Chittix Junior High School in Normal. He is also a worship leader at Vineyard Church and a 14-year veteran band director. They join founder and executive Kate Tombaugh of Treeder, board president Kevin Mangan of Chanahan, vice president Michelle Peel of Streeter, treasurer Marty Payne of Marseille, secretary Barb Ayling of Streeter, and board members Matthew Tombaugh of Streeter and Terry McTaggart of Ottawa. Poco a Poco will celebrate its 10th anniversary season, June 6th through 13th, 2026, hosting training programs and events for students pre-K through 12th grade. Poco a Poco's flagship Summer Music Fest in Streeter will feature family-friendly, free events that are open to the public, according to a news release. A short note, only household waste and recycling will be collected today, as the Town of Normal recognizes Veterans Day. All other waste collection services, including bulk waste, landscape waste, and brush for Tuesday routes, will be collected next week on the regular day. Wednesday routes will run as usual. Collection items should be placed on the curb no later than 6 a.m. to ensure collection. Town of Normal offices, including the electronics recycling facility, will also be closed Tuesday for the holiday. Those offices will reopen on Wednesday, November 12th. And today in history, on this date, in 1620, 41 pilgrims aboard the Mayflower anchored off Massachusetts, signed the Mayflower Compact, creating a local government for the colony that called for a civil body politic for our better ordering and preservation. In 1918, fighting in World War I ended as the Allies and Germany signed an armistice aboard a railroad car in northern France. In 1921, the remains of an unidentified American service member were interred in a tomb of the unknown soldier at Arlington National Cemetery in a ceremony presided over by President Warren G. Harding. In 1938, Irish-born Mary Mallon, who'd gained notoriety as Typhoid Mary, was blamed for the deaths of three people. She died on North Brother Island in New York's East River at age 69 after 23 years of mandatory quarantine. In 1966, Gemini 12 blasted off on a four-day mission with astronauts James Lovell, Edwin Buzz Aldrin aboard. It was the 10th and final crewed flight of NASA's Gemini program. In 1987, following the failure of two Supreme Court nominations, President Ronald Reagan announced his choice of Judge Anthony M. Kennedy, who went on to confirmation. And in 2020, Georgia's Secretary of State announced an audit of presidential election results because the margin was so tight. And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, November 11th, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.